Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff, only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk? Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Our Lord 2025. Just throwing a little biblical lingo at you because it just is that time of year. We're getting ready for Christmas, which is 1 week from today, and I'm having a lot of fun with it, and I plan to talk a little bit about it during the show. Welcome to the Junk Refund Show. It is the world's longest running junk removal radio show. Now in probably our third year, maybe even getting close to our fourth year. And we have a lot of fun doing it. Thanks to BBS Radio TV for being the network that we're on and for doing a great job. And we just enjoy being here and talking about all things having to do with how to get the junk out of your home and also how to get it out of your life. This week, we'll be focusing a little bit on how to have your best Christmas ever. That was the first published book that I wrote. I've written about seven or eight since. But this one is called How to Have Your Best Christmas Ever. It's on Amazon, and it was written back around 2012 when I was realizing that it was probably going to be the first Christmas in some 30 years of marriage that it looked like I might be alone. It turns out that I wasn't alone. My oldest daughter and my youngest daughter came back and spent a few days with me at Christmas time. And I put their pictures with me in front of Rockefeller Center in New York City on the cover of the book. So I am here to tell you, as a person who publicly proclaims and has done this for some 15 years on Facebook, that I'm one of the 10 happiest people in the world. No one has ever challenged that. No one's ever, taken an argument with it or whatever. It's just the way it is, and I have since added a few additional people onto that list because of all the happiness that I see that they have. So you're listening to a guy who claims to be really happy pretty much through the ups and downs of, you know, whatever the day might bring. But even with that being the case, if you're alone, I have some clues for you on how to have a great Christmas. There are a lot of people who just don't like the Christmas season because of various events that have happened in their life and the memories that get stirred up that have to do with Christmas. And I am not one of those. It's hard for me to relate to that just because I don't understand. I haven't been through that, I guess, is a good way to say it. So I don't pretend to know what that's like. But I do know what it's like to be happy pretty much on a day-in and day-out basis. And I've always been interested in the story of the birth of Jesus because of not only what we know about it from, say, the Gospels in the New Testament, but for stuff that we don't know, stuff that is not included there that just makes you wonder. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. Anyway, welcome to the show. I came in to my den here to do this show today, and got in here about 10 minutes ago from doing a a job at a guy's place in Rockville, Maryland, who is moving. This guy is moving soon, like this week, I think. And we've been working on cleaning out his house for about 3 months now. We've had about a month off because he was getting ready to kind of take the last things that he wants to move out and identify those. But he's been a little slow in dragging his feet. And he literally does drag his feet. He has some trouble walking. He uses a cane. So, you know, it's one of those situations where you don't want to push anybody. You just kind of have to let them take it at their own pace. But this morning, and actually, I guess this is, it's the second day. It's the second day that we have gone into the area that is above his, it's in between his carport storage area and his house. There's a little walkway right there. And right up above that walkway is a pull-down ladder that leads into this attic. And the attic basically covers an area that might be 10 feet deep and let's say maybe 8 feet wide, 8 to 10 feet wide. And you wouldn't think that's got a lot of stuff in it, but this guy's dad was an HVAC guy, you know, air conditioning, heating, ventilation, stuff like that. He was involved with electrical supplies, with heating elements, with, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And this guy kept all kinds of stuff in his attic, in this little attic, and everywhere else in this house. So the owner of the house, the son, has never really gone up into this little crawl space attic place. Yours truly went up there starting yesterday and today and started pulling out different amounts of scrap metal from what's up in this attic. And I think yesterday when we did this, I've got a guy named Scott who is about 6'4", probably about 210, and he's obviously tall and he can reach. And so I go up into this little crawl space, kind of sit on the edge and hand him box after box of stuff. That's how we've been cleaning it out. So yesterday, we spent about 3 hours, me handing down boxes to him. We'd get a bunch of boxes in the carport. Then I'd come down. We'd put them all on the lift gate of the truck. Scott would get up in the truck. And then it's a question of separating the metal from the brass and the copper and the aluminum and the wire and the magnets. All of those go in different buckets because they all have different values when you take them to a scrap metal yard. So we would go up there, maybe pull down 20 or 25 boxes of stuff. I'd hand them down to Scott. He'd make a just big pile of them. Then I'd come down and we'd go sort it all out. Well, yesterday, after sorting it out and taking it into the scrap metal yard, we dropped off about 1,000 pounds of regular metal. You get 5 cents a pound for 1,000 pounds. We got $50 for the metal. You're not going to get rich doing that. Then we dropped off a bunch of other stuff, including wire and copper and aluminum. And I think we had 20 electric motors. Those little guys are heavy. Those are a trick to hand down through kind of the doorway up into the attic. But we did it. And we got about $375 for the other stuff, which shows you the difference in value. And anytime you know, open up a box of stuff and it's all copper, little copper joints and connectors and stuff like that, that goes into an orange bucket that we have. And that's what you get paid the most on. You get paid 5 cents a pound for metal. You get paid almost $4 a pound for copper. So we get $50 for 1,000 pounds of metal. We get $375 for a bunch of other stuff. And that's a $420 trip into the metal scrapyard, right? Plus, we're getting paid to take the stuff in the first place based on how much of a truckload it is. So we get paid twice, and that's awesome. Today, I went up in there and we did the same thing again for about 3 hours, pulled down all kinds of stuff, maybe 4 hours, pulled down all kinds of stuff. And as you did, this attic was so well packed that I couldn't tell where the wall was, where it ended. I couldn't see it. I had to kind of burrow my way through one box at a time to finally end up seeing where this thing ended. Well, and I took a little flashlight up with me and looked around. And, you know, it's always exciting when you're up there pulling metal out of an attic and all of a sudden you see big coils of copper right there. That's like gold, you know, in this business. And so I would hand down this copper, and we did yesterday, probably cleaned out a fourth of it. Today we probably cleaned out maybe a third of it, something like that. And let's just say we're maybe two-thirds of the way through. But today, after we took down, I think I handed down to him 30 electric motors. These electric motors are about 30 to 40 pounds a piece, sometimes heavier. And I think we get paid 20 cents a pound when we take those into the dump. So the scrapyard. So we separate those. But I'm handing down, I think Scott said we took 20 of those electric motors in yesterday. We probably took 30 in, maybe even 35 in today. And luckily, none of them got dropped on Scott's head as I'm handing them down from the, you know, rafters above. And none of them got dropped on the floor. And those suckers are heavy. So that was a successful, you know, event just in and of itself. But today we got $655 by going into the scrapyard. Now, again, that's about $1,100 we've made in 2 days by cleaning out this attic and taking the stuff into the scrap metal yard and getting paid for it. It was a delight when I pulled a bunch of boxes out, and all of a sudden this morning behind the initial boxes were 10 about 2 foot square boxes by about 2 inches thick. And it said 50 feet coiled copper. And every one of those boxes had 50 feet of clean, never used coiled copper in them. Of the $655 we got today, 450 of it was from the copper. So again, different metals have different values. If you understand those values, you can take the right stuff into any scrap metal yard and they'll pay you for it. Your best friend in the scrap metal business, by the way, is one of these little magnets, a little portable magnet that's about an inch and a half long. We get them from the scrap metal yards. Many of these guys are really sharp and they give them away for free. That magnet is key because if it sticks to the metal, then that tells you it's regular sheet iron or metal. If it doesn't stick, that tells you it's either brass or copper or aluminum or something else, and the value goes up. So it's always kind of fun to pull into the scrap metal yard in a 16-foot stake body truck and just have it jammed full of really precious metal stuff, like, you know, buckets of copper and brass fittings. And we took in 3 buckets of wire, just cutting the wire off, you know, toasters and electric motors and just various wire that we were given when we, you know, or that we pulled out of this place. It was just a delight. And you go in there and they ring it up. You just keep taking more stuff, put it on a scale. They weigh it. They empty it. They give you the buckets back. You walk around the corner. You go in the office. You take the little slip that they give you with a barcode on it. You scan it into this like an ATM machine. And a few seconds later, the ATM machine spits out the amount of money that you're owed. In this case, $650. So that's a pretty productive morning. And it was fun. And so if you're looking for ways to make a few extra bucks, keep in mind scrap metal. It includes batteries, meaning car batteries, motorcycle batteries, lawnmower batteries. Not the Duracell little, you know, AA and single-A type batteries, but the batteries used to start engines, basically. Make money that way. We went to a gas station, an Exxon station over in Silver Spring, Maryland yesterday because we needed gas, right? So we pull in to get some gas. I have postcards that I designed on Vistaprint. I'm a big fan of Vistaprint. And we haul away scrap metal for apartment complexes for free because many times those apartment complexes will have, you know, weight sets, exercise equipment, bicycles, dishwashers, microwave ovens, any of that kind of stuff. They will have that, and they'll put it all in one area, and then we go by and empty that area for them for free. Other people do the same thing, but there's a lot of stuff getting discarded that should be recycled and not taken to the dump. So we do that for free. We went into the Exxon station yesterday. I have some of these postcards with me. I mail them out to apartment complexes in the area, and we have a pretty good database of apartment complexes that's growing. And some of those have contacted us and said, look, we want you to come every month and just clean out our space. We'll pay you to clean out our space, take the metal, but also take the other stuff. So then it turns into a contract, a monthly contract, that creates future cash flow. And that increases the value of your business because you have some future cash flow coming in. Anyway, so we will do that. And then back to this Exxon station, I have some of those blank postcards with me. I gave one to Scott, who's in the passenger seat. I said, hey, while I'm getting the gas, walk this over to the station over there where they're doing all of the work on the automobiles, so the shop area. Go over there and just give them this. Let them know we haul away metal for free. So Scott did. Then we took off. After we got the gas, we took off and started to go up to Columbia, Maryland, about 30 minutes away. We got a call about 10 minutes later from the guy that Scott gave the card to. And he said, hey, we actually have some metal sitting here out in front of our place. Can you come get it? And we said, sure. So we did a job up in Columbia. As soon as we were done, we turned around and went back to the same Exxon station and picked up that metal and then went straight to the scrap metal yard and dumped it off. Now, the metal that we had was like straight up regular metal, and it was some shelving units. It didn't weigh that much. We got about $17 for it. But I took a picture of the gas station and the service area where they do the maintenance on the cars and stuff. And the fact is we picked up another customer, and that's what you want. So anyway, it's been a busy couple of days running around with scrap metal. On the days that we don't have any junk removal jobs booked, we will go on Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, where I put ads for free scrap metal pickup on Craigslist, and that's been very successful. $5 ad gets you 30 days on Craigslist. That's just hard to beat. But we will do that on days that are slow. We go to Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist, and we just look at the listings where people have some kind of metal they're trying to get rid of for free, like dishwashers or stoves or, you know, ovens, refrigerators, any kind of appliances, weight sets. You know, everybody seems to have a treadmill that they're not using as much anymore. Any kind of stuff that's metal. And we just simply send a message that says, is this still available? And we will go around with a goal of picking up five items from five different people, or just one item from five different people, to get five more customers. That's kind of what we look for. And we'll do that on the days that are slow. So there's always something to do, and it keeps us busy, and it keeps us out of trouble, and it keeps generating money. So yesterday, $420 on scrap metal. Today, $650. That's almost $1,100 that we made in 48 hours by taking metal into a scrap metal yard instead of taking it to a dump and putting it in their metal section where you don't get paid anything. So it's possible to make some money picking up scrap metal. That's part one of today's show. We'll take a break here. We'll be back in about 60 seconds here on the BBS Radio Network. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan Cook. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, We junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Thank you. Welcome back to Junk Refund Show. I'm your host, Alan Cook. I'm here in Rockville, Maryland, doing the show today and having a lot of fun. It's nice to come in from being in the truck and be able to just sit down at the desk and talk to, on a radio show that goes out to 49 countries. That's kind of cool. And all you do is, you know, all I have is an iPhone. I mean, that's it. So that's kind of fun. I want to talk to you about some stuff that I started off talking about because I am an author. I've written 7 or 8 different books. One of them, the first self-published book that I did through Amazon, is called createspace.com, which is a great outlet if you want to get a book published. It's never been easier than now to write a book and get it published. You know, it just never has been easier. And so I wrote a book called How to Have Your Best Christmas Ever, and I basically documented what I did to have a great Christmas back around 2012. And I'm just going to give you a few tips of what can make for a great Christmas, regardless of what's going on in your life. Here I am, excited about Christmas. I'm looking at my little kind of a desktop tree that I got. This baby is about 3 to 4 feet high. It's probably 4 feet high. And I'm going to tell you more about this particular tree because it has such a cool story. But the year that I wrote the book, I basically documented what I did that year for Christmas and the joy that it brought me. And being in the junk removal business, sometime in December, we got a call to go down to an apartment complex and clean some stuff out for somebody, haul some stuff away. Sitting next to one of the dumpsters was a Christmas tree, 6 feet tall maybe, beautifully shaped, had been tossed out by somebody who was moving and couldn't take the tree with them. So I asked the maintenance guys, hey, can I have that tree? And they said, sure. I threw that in the back of the truck, took it home, and that was my Christmas tree for my best Christmas ever. And that little, it wasn't little, it was a decent-sized tree, but that tree was special to me because I basically rescued it. And rescued it from just getting tossed and gave it a new, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of life. And that was just a cool thing to do. You know, you don't have to buy a tree. If you see one that's been, you know, tossed, you can maybe use that one instead. I don't know. But just the fact that I didn't spend money on a tree, I got one for free. In fact, I got paid to take the stuff that I was there to take. And in the meantime, I just grabbed the tree and threw that in too. And everybody won because the maintenance guys didn't have to have it sitting around and didn't have to have it hauled away and whatever. So everybody wins, and I went home with my adopted tree. It was the right size. I put the decorations on it. Every time I looked at it for the next 3 or 4 weeks, I just started to laugh because it was free. And not only that, but I gave the tree the opportunity to have some Christmas as well, if that makes sense. You know how people talk to their plants and stuff? Well, I had a tree that I had for that year that was just kind of a special tree for me because I didn't pay, you know, $79 to go get it or whatever. I just rescued it. And that was a cool thing, and I liked that a lot. And that was kind of the spirit of what I did. You could have your best Christmas ever if you have any family that you're around. Now, at the time that I did this, I was living in Washington, D.C. All of my family, my 4 kids, were out in Utah. and I was in the process of going through a divorce, right? That is a perfect recipe for a rotten Christmas. And I just decided, no, I'm going to make this, you know, if I'm going to be by myself, I'm going to make this spectacular. You know, I just am. And I'm going to be happy. I have the right, and so do you, I have the right to be happy regardless of what's going on in my life. I'm just one of these people that believes that God puts you on the earth to be happy, not to be miserable, not to be stressed out. He puts you here to be happy. And so anything you can do to try to be happy is a plus. So one of the things I did that year, and I credit my daughter Maggie for this one, because she told me about a website called easydrawingtutorials.com. Now, I haven't gone on there for a few years, but I did do it back in 2012, because you go in there and you basically pick out a Disney character or a Marvel Comics character, you know, or any of these animated characters. There's so many of them out there. You basically pick one, and then it shows you step by step how to draw it, how to draw what you're looking at. So I went in and thought, okay, I'm going to draw one of these for each of my kids. My son, I drew Aladdin. I drew Ariel. I drew Snow White for my mom. I drew a couple of other Disney princesses for my other daughters. And what was amazing is that each drawing that I did, again, it's about 16 steps that you take, and it teaches you, and just by doing the process, it teaches you how to shape a person's face, how to put the eyes in proportionately to where they should be, you know, how to draw the nose, how to draw the ears, the hair, and all this kind of stuff. Well, I went in, and as I drew one of these drawings for one of my kids, and I then colored it in with colored markers, and they were beautiful, and they looked like they were professionally drawn, if I do say so myself. But I basically drew one of these for each of my kids, signed it, and then put it for safekeeping inside a large coffee table photo book. I think it was a photo book of the state of Arizona that is probably like 10 by 14 inches or something. And so I stuck the drawings inside there as I completed them, and I took a picture of each one, thank heavens, before I put it in the book. So all is going well. I'm very proud of these drawings. Now, see, that's a cool thing. That's a cool thing. You take time to make something for somebody for Christmas, a drawing of a character they're going to immediately recognize because that character reminds you of them. That's a cool Christmas gift. And Easy Drawing Tutorials shows you how to do it. So that's what I did. Well, then, in the process of, I don't remember if I was organizing stuff, packing stuff up because the home was getting ready to be listed for sale or something. I just don't remember exactly what had happened. We may have even sold it, and I had to be out by mid-January, maybe. I just don't remember. But I just remember that I took those drawings. There would now be about five or six of them. Stuck them in this book about the state of Arizona, this photo book about Arizona, and then for some reason came through and gathered up all the books, and for some reason unbeknownst to me, went out and either donated the books, took them to Goodwill or something. I don't remember what happened, but I just remembered one night I realized that my drawings were in the book. Now, how in the world I forgot that, I can't tell you. I don't remember. But I didn't have the book anymore. And I can't probably verbalize how depressed I was. Here it is, Christmas. Here it is, I've spent time, hours, making a customized gift for my wonderful kids. They were beautifully done. And now they're gone. And I, for some reason, didn't realize that they were in those books when I gathered up some of those books to kind of declutter, maybe. I don't remember. But all I wanted, and this is my point, all I wanted in my life at that point was those drawings back. That's all I wanted. Everything else is negotiable, but I need those drawings. Those are my gifts to my kids. I've got to have those drawings. They're gone. I don't remember where we took them. I just didn't remember. I was totally embarrassed about it. I was mad at myself for letting it happen. But then I remember that I took pictures of them. So I took the pictures and redrew them. I printed those pictures out, not just printed out and gave it to him, but I printed them out, put them on the top of an iPad screen so the light from the iPad would shine through it, and I redrew them. I did them a second time, and it went faster the second time, and it all worked. And I framed them, and I gave them to my kids. They're still original drawings, you know, trace drawings of an original drawing that I did, and I gave them to my kids, and I just felt fabulous. So I'm a big fan of, you know, creatively coming up with a gift for your family or your kids or friends or whoever. Sometimes when you make them something, just the act of making it says more to them than what the gift is itself, that you would take the time to do that. And so I'm a big fan of easydrawingtutorials.com. Doesn't matter if you're an artist or not, you know. Just go in and follow the steps, and they'll take you through step by step of how to do this, and you too can draw Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Ariel, you know, Aladdin, whoever, Aunt Tigger, and it will work. And it's a blast, and you too can be an artist without paying for any lessons. So I thought that was kind of cool. That brings me to my wonderful sister, Kristen. She is the oldest of the 11 children in our family. I am the second oldest. We have a tradition of, between all the siblings, we pick one person's name, and then it kind of rotates down one person the next year and the next year. So you kind of go through the whole group of your 10 siblings. And I had my older sister, Kristen, a few years ago, and I made her something. I don't remember what it was. I made her something kind of from scratch, a homemade gift of some kind. Well, then a little while later, she had my name, and one of our iconic photos in our family is me sitting on my grandfather's lap, and he is sitting on his John Deere tractor, his large tractor that he used as a farmer in Syracuse, Utah, and my middle name is his name, Joseph. So I'm named after my dad and my grandfather, and there I am as a four-year-old kid sitting on his lap with a big smile on my face because I'm on my grandpa's tractor. That's just, you know, great stuff. Well, my sister Kristen realized that that's an iconic photo in our family, so she contacted the John Deere Company or went online and found out that they sell John Deere miniature plastic tractors like my grandpa's tractor that are illuminated as Christmas lights for decorating a Christmas tree. Now, how's that for clever? And she bought me a set of John Deere tractor Christmas lights, green and yellow, for my Christmas tree. And then she made me large, let's say 2.5 feet by 2 foot by almost a foot thick pillow done in green and yellow with a John Deere tractor on the front of it to remind me of my fun time as a young kid with my grandpa. She made me the pillow. She gave me the Christmas lights. And then she went online to our church site, which has some historic family stuff on there if you choose to put it on there and put it online. And she downloaded a letter that my grandfather wrote to me when I was 11 years old back in 1969. She printed that up, and she put that inside the box. And then she wrote a letter to me herself, and just she said, I think the closing line of that letter said something like, Merry Christmas to the most upbeat man I know, right? So I am sitting here looking at my John Deere Christmas tree with its John Deere tractor lights on it. I went to CVS and picked up just for $8 a string of colored lights last night to just add more lights to it. And so I've got my Christmas tree, and on the top of it, there's not a star. There's a John Deere tractor sitting on top of it. And I look at this at night. When I turn off all the other lights, there's the Christmas tree. And all of a sudden, I'm kind of transported back to my grandfather's farm when I'm 4 years old and the world was perfect, right? So you can get a sense, I think, of the kind of Christmas that I'm having. And this is coming off the passing of my mother 2 weeks ago. The last show I did 2 weeks ago was in honor of my mom, who died at the age of 94, just before her 95th birthday. And I dedicated the show to her 2 weeks ago and talked about what a great lady that she is and some of the greatest things that I saw her do in her life. And here I am, probably this year will be alone throughout the Christmas season, because I just saw all of my family at my mom's funeral out in Utah 2 weeks ago. My daughter, oldest daughter, is blessing and christening her second child or second little girl on January 4th in their church out in Utah. So I will be there for that. And so I just thought, you know what? I don't need to really run out and see anybody for Christmas. I just saw everybody 2 weeks ago. I'm going to go see my daughter in about another 3 weeks. I think I'm good, you know? And so I'm here just enjoying it. And I decided on Sunday to do the 12 days of Christmas this year. So let me tell you where I am with that, because anybody can do this. Even though you haven't started already, you can make up time and still do it. Last Sunday, I realized, was the first day if you do the 12 days of Christmas. And it was December 14th. We have a wonderful, small but growing church choir that was singing in our church program on the 14th. And I had not been able to go to the two rehearsals they had prior, but I did get a copy of the music a week before, told the choir director that I'm a big fan of his, and I said, hey, I'll take a look at it. And then I joined in on their final rehearsal, kind of a half rehearsal before they actually performed. I'm a first tenor, and I kind of looked at the music before I went to church and felt like, yeah, I think I can do this. The rehearsal went fine. I then sang, and I decided to make that effort of singing in the church choir when I had not been to the rehearsals, and I wasn't 100% sure I was actually going to do it. But, you know, spirit of Christmas is about giving, and I thought, okay, that's day one. So on the first day of Christmas, I sang in our church choir. On Monday, the second day of Christmas, I went and got the Christmas tree. On Tuesday, I went and purchased some Christmas cards to give out to three of the people in our congregation that I and another guy have been asked to just kind of keep an eye on, make sure they're okay, and kind of be the first line of defense in case those folks need any help. We take care of each other in our church. And so I have three people that do that. So on Tuesday, I did that. On Wednesday, which was last night, we have a Bible study class, and for 4 years, I have provided Krispy Kreme donuts for that Bible study class, and everybody loves the donuts. Normally, I buy a dozen donuts, and I cut them in half, so it covers 24 people. This week, just because it's Christmas, I decided to buy two dozen donuts and give everybody a whole donut as a little Christmas thing. Well, that was a big success, by the way. That worked out great. And I'll come back and tell you a little bit about how we buy those babies so cheap, because other organizations can do what we're doing, but it's a lot of fun. But anyway, and then that gets me Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That's the first 4 days of Christmas. Tonight, I'm taking six of our church young missionaries out to dinner at Panda Express. That will be day five, and I'm doing the 12 days of Christmas. And I have not decided in advance what I'm going to do on each of these days. I just think about, let's see, what's something good that I could do that would make me happy? And that's what I'm doing. So anyway, I'm in the middle of the 12 days of Christmas. I'm having a blast. I live by myself. My closest My closest sibling is in Austin, Texas. I'm in Washington, D.C. And my mother died 2 weeks ago, and all things considered, I'm about as happy as anybody I know. So anyway, if you want to talk more about happiness, call the show, and we'll take your call and chat more. We're happy to do it. 888-627-6008. Again, 888-627-6008. And we'll talk happiness and Christmas all you want to. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show, where we're trying to give you some ideas about how to get the junk out of your life and also out of your home and out of your garage and out of your attic if you have one of those. And we're going to take a break. We'll be back in about a minute and do the final segment of the show.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. I'm coming to you from Rockville, Maryland. I am your host, Alan Cook. I've been in the junk removal business for 20 years. And I got to tell you, it's fun because it's like getting paid to go on a treasure hunt every day. And one of the things that sets us apart is that if we find some stuff that we're cleaning out in your house or apartment or condo or whatever, or office, that is good stuff that we think someone might buy, we'll put it up for sale. And if it sells, you get a percentage of that sale. And that sets us apart. You can actually get money back off of your stuff, whereas everybody else will either send it home with their drivers or take it to the dump and throw it away or keep it and not tell anybody, or maybe they'll sell it and take the money for themselves or whatever. But there's lots of different ways that we can make money for you in our business. Here's a quick example. We do jobs all over the country, by the way, all over the United States, and we've gone from... Remember, we're headquartered in the Washington, D.C. area, but we've done jobs from Seattle to San Diego, from Chicago to San Antonio, and from Portland, Maine to Tampa, Florida. And one of the jobs we did was in, I can't remember the name of it, it's an Indian name, I just can't remember it, in Wisconsin. And lady had a storage unit she wanted cleaned out. Her husband had passed away. Most of the stuff was his. She finally came to grips with the idea of just take this stuff and get it out of here. I said, okay, is there anything you want in this storage unit before we start? She said, no, take it all. That's good. I said, okay, if we find something that's valuable, we'll put it up for sale. If we sell it, you'll get some money back. Okay, that's great. So I flew to, I don't know, somewhere in Wisconsin. I can't remember what city I flew into or whatever. But I flew there. I rented a pickup truck, went to the storage unit, and just started hauling out truckloads of stuff, some of which went into the local town and we donated. Some of it we trashed. But she had a lot of bins, these plastic bins, you know, that you put stuff in. And some of those were transparent bins. And I noticed one that had some Green Bay Packers memorabilia in it. And when I opened that bin up, there was an Aaron Rodgers number 12 jersey sitting in there. I thought, now that's something somebody would buy, right? Well, there's another, and there were some other, you know, Christmas items that were Packers items and stuff. There was other stuff that I started to set aside if it caught my attention. In one of the boxes on the bottom were some small boxes, like jewelry kind of boxes, but more flat. And I popped a couple of those open, and there were coins inside there, right? So after we did the Wisconsin job, we went to Chicago to do a job down in that area, and I pulled into a coin dealer, and we sold the coins from the Wisconsin job on the spot for about $650. The lady in Wisconsin got a third of that, got 35% of that. And that's kind of how it works. And so here I am driving around the Midwest, making extra money off of stuff that I was paid to take, where everybody wins. And that's a good thing. You know, that's an awesome thing. So that's an example of what we do and how you can make some extra money with us, whereas you won't do that with any of the other junk removal businesses, which is probably why we get calls all the time, every day, from around the country, because the word is out that, you know, there's a better mousetrap out there. That's kind of the way we've built this. We also, by the way, we work Monday through Saturday. We're closed on Sunday. I love to call ourselves the Chick-fil-A of the junk removal business. We're closed on Sundays. And frankly, we're proud of that. So we seem to be doing just fine without being open on Sunday, so why change, right? So everything's good that way. I want to talk a little bit, because it is a week before Christmas. I want to talk a little bit about Jesus's birth, because I'm kind of fascinated by this. One of the guys, by the way, that I am interested in getting on the show at some point, and it should be around Christmas time, is a gentleman who is a physicist, has a PhD in physics and in astronomy. And I want to talk to him about the Star of Bethlehem. I wanted to know, from a physics standpoint, how do you create a star that shows up and shines over the place where the wise men need to come to? And then, you know, once their job's done, the star leaves. I mean, how do you do that, given that the sun is our closest star, and I think it's 93 million miles away? So how do you create a star that guides people to Bethlehem/Jerusalem? That, from a physics standpoint, that is not an easy thing to do. And it's a temporary thing. It doesn't show up every December 25th over Bethlehem. I'm just kind of created by this and kind of fascinated by it. So I'm trying to get this friend of mine. I heard him lecture one night a couple of years ago, and I got his card afterwards and said, hey, I'd love to have you on the show and have you talk about this. But that's one thing that fascinates me. But let me tell you a couple of other things. I'm actually writing a talk right now about the birth of Jesus. And the opening line says, and this was just as of a couple of nights ago, in order to understand the background of Jesus's birth, you have to understand the steps involved in a Jewish wedding at Jesus' time, because that's where it starts. Let me tell you what I've learned, because this is fascinating stuff to me, and it opens up some thoughts about the story in Luke 2 that Christians will read around the world on Christmas Eve every, you know, year. To do it, I'm going to go to an app here that will pull up the scriptures for me that I can read. And because of a Bible study class that I was at last night, it's already opening up to Luke chapter 2. And it says, and again, you've heard this if you've read this before, and probably all of you had, Luke chapter 2, verse 1, and it came to pass in those days there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. What that really means is all of the Roman Empire should participate in the census, so the people at Rome know how many people are in the empire, so they can figure out how much we're going to tax everybody. It was a census that was taken. And it said, and all went to be taxed, everyone, into his own city. It was the city of your ancestors, your birth home or whatever. That's where you went. Now notice this sentence. This is verse 4. And Joseph, not Joseph and Mary, just Joseph. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David. doesn't say anything about Mary making this trek. It says Joseph did it, and then it tells you where he went. And then in verse 5, it tells you why. To be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. If the comma in that sentence was after the word taxed, it would suggest that he and Mary were traveling together. The comma is after the word wife, which to me means the purpose of his going up and going to Bethlehem, one of the purposes was to be taxed or participate in the census, with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. Okay? So, espoused means not married yet. Espoused means engaged. Now, this gets back to the Jewish wedding, and I'm not an authority on this, but I am an interested student. So, verse 6, while we're on the scriptures, then I'll come back to it. And so it was that while they were there, notice they were already down in the Bethlehem area. They didn't just show up one night and then the baby was born the next morning. And so it was that while they were there, the days, plural, were accomplished that she should be delivered, future tense. They were already there. Now think about this for a second. Just off the top of my head. There's a big risk you run. There's a couple of big risks you run with this story. Number one, Mary was a virgin. And everybody in town knows it. Everybody in Nazareth knew everybody's business, but everybody kind of knows, you know, what's going on and who's who and et cetera. And biblical scholars have said that at the time of Jesus, the typical age for a woman to be married was about 12 to 14. The typical age for a man was 17 to 19. If you're at least 18 years old, that is the legal age. That means you have to go back to the, I'm going to call it your birth city or the, like Joseph is going back to Bethlehem. 18 is the limit, is the age limit where you're accountable to be in the census. So we don't know how old these guys were. But one thing we do know is what the law of Moses said if you got pregnant out of wedlock. The punishment for that was death by stoning at the front door of the parents' home of the bride or the woman. Because that way, not only do you kill her with stoning, but you also bring shame upon the whole house because it happens at the front door of their house. That was the penalty. So you got a real problem here with Mary. Remember when she was told that her cousin, Elizabeth wasn't her cousin, there's too big of an age gap between Elizabeth and Mary for them to be the children of siblings. There's too big of an age gap. That doesn't work. They were relatives, but they weren't cousins. And they were relatives. And as soon as Mary found out that Elizabeth had been blessed with a child in her old age, Mary makes a beeline out of Nazareth and goes down to the hill country of Judea and stays for 3 months with Elizabeth, right? And then John the Baptist is born, and then Mary goes back to, it says, to her own house in Nazareth. But see, you got a problem here. You can't let a virgin start to show that she's pregnant. Or the elders of the Jews in Nazareth are going to basically say, wait a minute, that's adultery or fornication, that's death by stoning. You got to get Mary out of Nazareth quick, soon, before she starts to show, and get her down into a place where she can kind of be hidden away and let the natural course of events take its place. And then she's ready to have the child. By the way, in a Jewish wedding, it really was about matching people up, and there's a contract drawn up, and the groom agrees to pay a fee to the father of the bride to compensate him for the fact that he's about to lose a daughter not working in his home in the future, but also to compensate him for what he spent to raise her in the past, and it's a legal agreement. It's a binding agreement between two families. It doesn't have as much to do with love and romance as it does with preserving the family and carrying it forward. Most of these marriages at the time of Jesus were done by match. They were matched up between the parents would create this match. And sometimes the two people involved, the bride and groom, don't even know each other. But it's not about romance and love. It's about what's best for the two families. And when this contract is drawn up, you basically create two families that are really tied together quite closely. So there's more to this, but one of the things that happens is that one of the agreements that the groom, when he goes over to visit his future father-in-law, they agree upon a price that the groom is going to pay to marry the daughter of the father-in-law, future father-in-law. Once that's agreed upon and it's a signed document kind of thing, it's as though they're married, but they're not really married. That they're not officially married until they consummate the marriage, and that happens back at a place that the groom is supposed to prepare, either a room adjacent to his father's home or a room in the home where the bride will move in to be with him. And during that room, they give him a year. They give him a year to create that room and make sure it's done right. And he also has to stock it with food for 7 days, because that's basically the honeymoon period. And once they consummate the marriage during that 7 days, that's when they're officially married. Up until then, it's all but official. It looks legit, but they're not officially married until they consummate the marriage. So that's one of the things that's always baffled me. There's a question here of Mary can't just stay in Nazareth and keep getting bigger and bigger. Somebody's going to see this and go, wait a minute, you're a virgin. How did this happen? And they're going to put two and two together, and Mary's going to get stoned. And then that interrupts the whole process of Jesus being born. It seems to me you get her out of Nazareth pretty early in the process and then get her away safe. She already has a place to stay. She stayed for 3 months with Elizabeth down in the hill country of Judea. Well, why can't she go back there, right? Elizabeth needs some help. She now has a son, and Elizabeth's in her old age. You see how it starts to form a little thing? And so then, at some point, Joseph leaves and goes down as well. And I'm always wondering if that's why it says, and Joseph also went up out of, and why did he do it? To be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, who was great with child. So we don't know. This is all some guesswork. But it's a fascinating story, and what we're not told is quite interesting to me. It's always been a fascinating thing to me. But one other story real quick about the shepherds. You have the shepherds were told, according to the Bible, they were told two things by the angel. You'll find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, that's clue number one, lying in a manger. That's it. I mean, these guys, these shepherds did not go door to door in Bethlehem and say, hey, anybody here, like, you know, in a manger out back that's about to have a child? No, they went with haste. You know why they went with haste? Because they knew where they were going. You don't travel with haste if you're not sure where to go. You travel with haste if you know where you're going. There's a birthing cave outside of Jerusalem in the Bethlehem area that has swaddling clothes in it. Those clothes are used to wrap the first male lamb that is born to the mother sheep. Is that a ewe? I'm not sure what you call that. That first male lamb is special, and they wrap it in swaddling clothes to protect it, keep it clean, keep it unspotted. And those clothes, those swaddling clothes, are used for a specific purpose in that birthing cave outside of Jerusalem in the Bethlehem area. I believe that's where this birth took place. I believe that's why the shepherds knew exactly where to go and why they went there with haste. And I believe that's why they didn't have to be told a lot about where to go. The angel just gave them two clues, and they went, oh, I know where that is. That's in the birthing cave. Yeah, that makes sense. The Lamb of God is going to be born in the birthing cave where the best sheep were born that were later sacrificed on the altar of the temple to ask for forgiveness for the sins. The parallels between Jesus's life and these lambs are remarkable. So anyway, time's up for the show today, but that's what's been on my mind, and it's a fascinating time of year, and I invite you to read through Luke 2 and some of the other chapters there and try to fill in the gaps of what we're not told and, you know, do some research and learn about a Jewish wedding and kind of get inside this culture and put the pieces of the puzzle together. It's a fascinating thing to do. Anyway, I hope in sharing some of this stuff that doesn't have anything to do with how to haul a couch out of your living room, that we're also helping you have a better life and a stress-free life and a junk-free life so you can enjoy your life more. That's what's happening with me. If we can help other people have that same experience, all the better. We wish everybody a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, regardless of what your religious affiliation is. And just remember to love each other, do good to each other, and treat each other the way you would like to be treated, and you'll have a wonderful holiday season. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a special Christmas show, and I, again, do a shout-out to the BBS Radio Network for their sponsorship and the professional way they do this. We're proud to be on their network, and we wish you all the very best of holidays. I'm your host, Alan Cook. Join us next week, Thursdays at 3 o'clock Eastern, for the Junk Refund Show, where we teach you how to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life. Happy holidays, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.